Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In recent decades, the Northeast African country of Sudan has experienced a great deal of turmoil, widespread violence, wars, economic collapse, and the secession of South Sudan. It's been also a very tumultuous summer in Sudan, starting with security forces attacking a sit-in in the capital city of Khartoum. That was on June 3rd, then a mass march on June 20th. More recently, Sudan's ruling military council, which took over after President Omar Hassan al-Bashir's ouster, signed a power-sharing agreement with the main opposition coalition, and this will hopefully pave the way for a transitional government and eventual elections. This hour, we want to better understand what's going on in Sudan by talking with several Sudanese Americans who live here in Iowa. It may surprise you that there are several thousand Sudanese Americans living in our state, and Iowa City in particular has a large Sudanese American population. In fact, one of its elected council members in Iowa City is a Sudanese American. Mazahir Salih is an Iowa City councilwoman and a Sudanese American. She's sitting across from me in the Iowa City studio. Mazahir, Councilwoman Salih, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you, Ben. Welcome.
You spent a good part of your summer in Sudan. I understand from the end of May through the end of July.
Yes.
Why did you go?
Usually, you know, I take my children every year and we go there for just vacation, for school vacation. You know, most of the Sudanese do the same thing because I would like, I am the first generation immigrant, and I would like, of course, my children to know their cousins there, my sisters there, her children, are like immediate family still in Sudan. That's why every summer we go there, and also they can practice their Arabic. So that's why we go there every summer. But this time was interesting, yeah.
Yeah, you know, keep the family roots there since you're first generation. You immigrated to the U.S. in 1997, I understand, and then came to Iowa City in 2011.
That's true.
And you were elected councilwoman just within the last couple of years.
Yes, I'm serving my second year, yeah.
Very good. Tell us what you experienced in Sudan. Were you mainly in the capital, Khartoum?
Yes. When we went there, my children and I, that's after, of course, of Omar Bashir stepped down, which was exciting that we're going to go there and celebrate with the people. Mm-hmm. And we went on the 23rd of May to Sudan, very excited that I will be part of this movement and try to make everything move forward with the people of Sudan. But unfortunately, we went there after maybe 7 days, you know, I don't know if you know that the protesters were sitting in after the dictator stepped down. The protester had a sitting in front of the military headquarters, and they being there for days and months. So they demand that the speed of the transition from military to the civilian government. But while they doing this negotiation and everything was going great and people still doing the sit-in, I remember I took my children and we went there many times in the first week. It was very exciting, mm-hmm. just to see the people, how they are, the way that they chanting, and all the people from different tribes, they came together, young people, Christians and Muslims, everybody's come together to do the same thing. That was amazing for me. But unfortunately, in June 3rd, mm-hmm. while the people were sleeping, you know, the security force, they came and they killed those people in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they burned the tent that they being sleeping under, and they put some bodies in the Nile River, and over 150 people were killed on that day. And since then, you see the security forces car everywhere, militia's car is everywhere in Khartoum, and nobody's even can move from their, you know, town that they stay at.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you to back up just a moment, because I want to make sure we understand the importance when you said you went there in May, and it was very important because the longtime president of Sudan, who is now standing trial, Omar Hassan al-Bashir,
yes.
Had ruled Sudan for how long?
30 years.
30 years.
Yeah.
And what kind of ruler was he?
Just a dictator, of course. And it was really, everything is getting bad. You know, like getting worse, I mean. Really, from like price of food, from like living situations, basic needs, everything is really, education, healthcare. He really, really damaged every single thing in the country.
Mm-hmm. And what happened if you opposed him? What would happen to you if you
You will be arrested immediately. And some people, they don't know where is their children, their brothers, their sisters who've been arrested.
They would be, they disappear.
They disappeared. They completely disappeared. We don't know where they are. Some of them still, I know a family who are still looking for their child. You know, he'd been arrested for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And so the military stages is a coup. Takes over, deposes the president.
Who the military council?
The military council took over, and this
yes.
is and this is when at that time you came.
Yes,
in May.
Yeah,
and so the military took over, promising what?
Promising this is will be transferred to a civilian government, but you know they need to sit down with the force of Freedom and King so they can come up with a plan for the transition. And this was while they were negotiated all this, that what happened. They came and they tried to clear out the sit-in in front of the military headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a lot of people being killed.
I want to play a little bit of audio from, I think, just before you arrived in April of 2019 for your summer visit. This is a Sudanese protester we're going to hear who became a symbol of feminist resistance against the ex-president, Bashir, dressed in a white robe and gold moon earrings. She says, you'll hear in this clip, in the name of religion, they burnt us, and the crowd replies, revolution. Let's hear a little bit of this from this protester, April 2019 in Khartoum. So this is referring when she says, in the name of the religion, they burnt us. That is what you described earlier, right?
Yes, because when those people come, they always talk about religion. They want to rule like according to religion. But if they did, we would not be like this way, because they really doing every single thing against religion.
Mm-hmm.
Killing people is completely against religion. And that's what they being doing. And they being stealing the resources of the country. That's against religion, too. You know, they really just by the name of religion, they did every single thing, every bad thing that you can imagine, which is completely against the religion.
Mm-hmm. So what else did you witness there while you were there from the end of May to the end of July? What were some of the other highlights of this political turmoil, which will hopefully end in a better future for your native country?
I guess it's still there is more many people in many sectors that belong to the regime still. And, you know, it will need time, a lot of work and patience from the people of Sudan so they can clear out all this. Because those people, they build each sectors with their own people. They hire, they don't have to be qualified to the position, but they hire all the people that just belong to their party.
So a lot of cronyism.
Exactly, and corruptions and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know this is going to be hard for the people of Sudan, but with patience and motivation, this will be really, you know, solved. And I also see another good part of this, which is the people of Sudan, how optimistic they are, how they come together to fight this, and how, like, a woman play a big part in moving and driving this revolution to move forward.
Women do.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Women of Sudan. And, you know, now all the young people and all the people come together and everybody talk about by all the people, women, men, it doesn't matter, but all of us are the people of Sudan, which I like it. People are starting to understand what justice means. And also when I see the picture of the Friday prayer on the sit-in, in front of the military headquarters, and you see the Christians holding like the tent by their hands so they can create a shed for the Muslim people to pray Friday prayer. Can you imagine that picture?
Mm.
Like Christian and Muslim come together and they help them even pray. this is really amazing. I think we are going to the right direction. I think the people of Sudan, especially young people, they will drive Sudan to the right directions. And I think this is will be just, we need just patience, because a lot of damage has been happened to Sudan by the old dictator. But I think we are moving forward in the right direction.
If you just joined us, my guest this half hour is Mazahir Salih, Iowa City Councilwoman and Sudanese American, talking about what's going on in her native country, Sudan, in Northeast Africa. She has been serving as Iowa City Councilwoman in her second term now. Did you say?
Yes, my second term. Yeah.
Your second term here?
No, not second term, second year.
Second year, excuse me. Okay. And Mazahir is one of several thousand Sudanese Americans who live here in Iowa. Tell me a little bit more about where we are now. I want to play a little bit of a clip, some audio from Mahmoud Darir, special envoy of the Ethiopian Prime Minister, speaking in July of this year,
yes,
after the Sudanese military and protesters signed a power-sharing agreement. Let's have a listen to Mahmoud Darir.
It is a great moment that the people of the Sudan have reached this historic moment. The parties, I would not say the different entities of the Sudan, but a unit, a united front that represents the gallant army of the Sudan, the Transitional Military Council, and of course, the revolutionary youth, intellectuals, pioneers who have taken to the streets to stand for democracy.
Okay, Mazahir, tell us a little bit about the goals of the protesters. Are they united in what they want? Sometimes you have a revolution that overthrows a long-term dictator, and then they are united in their opposition to the dictator, but then as soon as they come to power, it fractures, and people have a different view and a different understanding of what democracy is. What do you see as the challenges on the road to democracy for Sudan?
I think the people of Sudan, they learn a lot from the Arab Spring movement from another country and how things start collapsing. That's why they try not to do the same thing there. And I guess the Sudanese people, they come together really and they unite and they have one goal. They created the from different parties come together, mm-hmm, and they created the force of freedom and change. And that force of Timothy King is all of them different parties, by the way. It's not only one party. And all those people, they sit down, they come up with what they need for Sudan, and they start negotiation with the military council, with, of course, transition military council, with help of the, African unions, and also Ethiopian prime minister, Abiy Ahmed. Yeah, he's also was there to help out in this. And right now, they come to they created the power sharing agreement right now, and they sign it. And if you want me to talk a little bit about
What is it? What is the path that creates?
That will be power sharing will last for 39 months. Election to be held at the end of that period, and the sovereign council cabinet and legislative body will be formed, and a general will head the council for the first 21 months. I wrote this actually when I was supposed to do it last week, but they already signed the agreement and they created the council, the transition council, which consists of 11 members, 5 civilian and 5 military, and one plus one person supposed to be in agreement in both. And the greater thing, they choose that one person to be a Christian woman.
Hmm.
Can you imagine?
To tell us how unusual that is, because Sudan, not South Sudan, but Sudan is the large majority Muslim, right?
Of course, yeah. And this has never happened before. But, this is will give you the vision of this movement, where people come together. It doesn't matter if you are Christian, if you are from a certain tribe, or how much you make, or what color of your skin, or if you are a male or female. That's what it is right now. And I think this is really, really great. 11 members, and also a prime minister, he just been nominated. And his name is, oh my gosh, why I want to forget his name? But, you know, let me come with that. But he been nominated just right now. His name is Hamdok. Mm-hmm. And he also work on the African United Nations. And I guess this is will be really great. And he will help the cabinet of the rest of the ministers of the sectors.
Mazahir, what is seen as the biggest threats to this process on the road to democracy? It has to be a very fragile state at this point. What do you see? What do other Sudanese see as the threats to fulfilling the promise, the wish of many of the protesters in becoming a representative democracy?
You know, back before this, the old dictator coming, like 30 years ago before that, we have almost transitioned to a civilian government where this military, the military guy come and just took over Omar al-Bashir. And we, first thing, we scared that's going to happen again. And the second thing is what we are scared from is the prayer from another country influencing, you know, some military council not keeping the promise. Because, you know, if I guess can throw out there, like Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, they really prefer a military council, a military government to be in Sudan, lead Sudan, for their own benefit. And that's why we don't want any outside influence. That will affect our transition. We need help, by the way, from the United States especially to help us organize a lot of things. We have a lot that Sudan have a lot that we need.
Has U.S. foreign policy currently been helpful to Sudan?
I guess at least some senators, they spoke out, and we have 95 senators sign a resolution from both party, bipartisan, so they can transit. They asked to be speed the transfer of the, you know, the military to civilian government. We have 94 people sign that. There is really, we create a momentum there, and I hope this is will move forward, and the Congress and the senator will start working on this and help the people of Sudan. We have sanctioned for a long time. We hope it has been really, you know, put partially, they remove it, but it's not like fully remove it. Hopefully, this is one of the key things that happened.
Right,
from the
because
United
Sudan is still listed as a state sponsor of terrorism,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. And we need to remove that too, because, you know, this is also something affect the economic of Sudan.
Mazahir, I wanted to go back to something else you mentioned to have you go in a little more, describe what this means for you, for your country, for your fellow Sudanese Americans here in Iowa. And it's often misunderstood, the role of women in Arab countries, in Muslim societies, in that part of the world. Tell us a little bit more about how women have emerged in this change of government in Sudan, the traditional role of women, and how that is perhaps changing.
Yes, but to tell you the truth, Sudanese woman was really leader from long, long, long time. You know, and if you see, they call them Kandaka, which is queen, you know, like a phrase, like Nubian phrase, which is called queen. And they used to call it for the woman who lead on the, like, back days. But the women are really leaders in Sudan, since if you compare it to the old Arab
with
countries.
With all the rights that men have had traditionally.
Yes, but still there is a lot more to do. Still there is a lot of limitations happening in Sudan, but we are working it. But this movement really changing a lot, and I hopefully all the women will have like full right for that.
What is changing? What are the rights that women are getting today in Sudan that they didn't have before, for instance?
I don't have like example of something, but what I see now, like women leading. If you see the woman who leading the protest, mm-hmm. and going out side by side with men, you see not only this woman that she become the, you know, the icon of the Sudanese feminism, but you know there is many others who really help, you know, on the protest and help out doing a lot of work toward, you know, the revolution, which is, I think women are doing a lot of good things in Sudan right now.
You have been in the United States for a number of years in Iowa City, so since 2011. You're in your second year as the an Iowa City councilwoman. Tell us a little bit about what it's been like to live here in Iowa. For instance, start by telling us, why are so many Sudanese Americans here in Iowa? What brought you here as a group?
I guess, like, Sudanese, they have this kind, they always help each other. And everybody, when come to the state, you know, some people, they came direct from Sudan to Iowa. Some people, they came from another state to Iowa.
But also being driven away from Sudan by the turmoil there.
Of course, yeah. You know, no one will really move from their country unless they are really not happy or it's not comfortable for them.
Or their lives are threatened.
Yes, exactly. And the people, when they came here to the people in Iowa, when you ask them how they get to Iowa, of course they know somebody Sudanese who was in Iowa before and he referred them to come here. Like, I know some people in Sudan, they call me and they say, hey, we won the lottery, how we would like to come to Iowa. Is Iowa a good place to live? I say, yeah. Come over.
So Iowa is known in Sudan.
Yes, a lot of people know Iowa because
What is it known as?
I guess maybe also, you know, there is many people, they've been living here in this community for a long time, and they've been referring people to come here for a study and everything. But also Iowa become famous after I've been elected.
Because, of course.
Yeah, because it was like everywhere. Everybody know Iowa in Sudan, and everybody started knowing the people, you know. I saw like some of elected official in Iowa, like Rod Sullivan. He was a beer in our beer, local beer in Sudan.
It is true that you are the first Sudanese American elected to office?
Yes. And I guess, and from Iowa, that's why I make like really Iowa famous to a lot of people who don't know Iowa before, and now they knowing about Iowa. And the matter that the people who are in Iowa just being referring by another people who somebody will call, can I come to Iowa, and they will come.
Okay.
Yeah.
We need to take a short break, and we'll be back with more of Mazahir Saleh, Iowa City Councilwoman, Sudanese American. Fascinating to hear about her native country, but she'll also be joined by two other Sudanese Americans. We'll hear from a high school student in Iowa City, wrote a letter to the editor in the high school newspaper. This is to help her classmates and other people here in Iowa understand the circumstances in Sudan. Also, we'll hear from an Iowa leader for the Arab American Institute. If you are Sudanese American, you're living in Iowa or the Midwest, we'd like to have you join this conversation as well. Tell us your story. What would you like to chip into this conversation so that Iowans can better understand Sudanese American culture? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. RiverToRiver@iowapublicradio.org. I'll be back with more as we explore Sudanese American perspective here in Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we're exploring our Sudanese American community right here in the Midwest. And in Iowa, there are several thousand Sudanese Americans living in the state of Iowa. And so we're trying to understand, help us understand the turmoil and perhaps the path to democracy in this Northeast African country through our Sudanese American neighbors, community members here in Iowa. Mazahir Saleh is with us. Mazahir is an Iowa City Councilwoman. And we also have two other guests joining us as well. We have Razan Hamza is a junior at West High School in Iowa City, born in New Hampshire, but has lived in the U.S. Her whole life and also in Iowa City for about the past 10 years. Razan, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
And also Newman Abuisa is with us. Newman is actually a Syrian, born in Damascus. But Newman, welcome to you. You've been in the U.S. for quite a long time.
For 35 years.
For 35 years, an American citizen. And we'll talk with you in your position to get your perspective as an Iowa leader for the Arab American Institute. But I want to start with Razan here just quickly, because you wrote a letter to the editor of your high school newspaper at West High. What is that newspaper called? Is it?
It's called The West Side Story.
The West Side Story. And this was to set out to describe to your classmates and others who read the newspaper what?
Basically how the Sudanese revolution affected individuals and their families.
Mm-hmm. And you have a copy of that right in front of you. Would you mind reading the first couple of paragraphs?
Of course. Okay. Imagine living in a country which has been ruled under a dictatorship for as long as you can remember. The economy is poor, the government problematic. Yet you stay. Not for the harsh conditions you were raised in, but for the people. Almost everyone you come across is there for you during hard times. Welcoming, friendly faces greet you everywhere you go. Faces that are smiling through the pain of knowing that their country was once one of the most beautiful, successful countries on the entire continent. Imagine the economy starts getting worse and worse by the minute. If you were struggling before, now you can barely afford staple food items to feed yourself and your family. You've been hearing of the protests going on in the capital, so fed up, you decide that you want to join in, and you travel there from cities away in hopes of being a part of a group that makes a difference, and you stay for weeks. It's hot out, and you're starving, as it's the holy month of Ramadan, and you're fasting. The conditions that you and the rest of the growing population of protesters in the capital are going through are unbearable, but you can't leave. You're determined to revert the country back into the democracy it once was, and get rid of your country's dictator. This eventually happens, and in a few days your country has been put in the hands of a transitional military council. Unappeased, most protesters remain. Suddenly you hear a gunshot. You turn around and see men with guns firing aimlessly into the crowd. Fearing for your life, you flee the scene thinking about your family waiting for you back home. Still, many people remain at the protests, headstrong and fully determined to get what they want. This is exactly what is happening in Sudan. These protests have turned into a massacre as the military council attempts to suppress opposition to the government in the capital. The situation is not only frightening to everyone in the country, but every Sudanese person outside of the country, such as myself, who fear for their family and friends back home with every waking moment. Going on my phone to find the list of martyrs shakes me up every time, and I thank God that none of my family members have been on that list. Reason being that they are taking part in the civil disobedience aspect of the revolution, where they don't leave their house like they regularly would, in order to avoid all of the military officers. Leaving the house could mean getting held and beaten by some of the roaming military officers, or even getting arrested for opposing the government. Of course, people aren't entirely safe in their own homes either. On different social media platforms, there have been videos going around of the military officers shooting their guns into random houses they come across.
Razan Hamza, reading the first part of her letter to the editor recently. She is a junior at West High School in Iowa City. And this is very interesting, Razan. Explain this, because the whole essay is fascinating, but you try to put us in the shoes of someone in Sudan, right? You are an American, of course. You were born in the U.S., but you have this wonderful Sudanese heritage there. What prompted you to want to make your classmates and others understand what your country is going through?
It was a very hard time for everybody who is not even living in the country who is Sudanese, because we take that with us everywhere. It's not just when you're in Sudan, you're Sudanese. When you're not in Sudan, you're also still Sudanese, and what happens there affects you even when you're not there. So it felt as if I was there when everything was happening, and just hearing about it and all, it was very heartbreaking, basically.
How were you hearing about it? Through social media primarily?
Yeah. Basically, I'd open up my phone and like it'd be all over every single social media platform, and we'd have the news on. It'd be like Al Jazeera, and like everything was just about what was going on in Sudan.
Mm-hmm. And who are you connecting with in Sudan?
Our whole family, really. We would just call them from time to time, make sure that they're still doing all right, you know.
Did you, I imagine, you yearn to be there in their presence in this tumultuous time at sometimes?
Yes. We were planning on going, but around the time that we thought that we should go, that's when all the killing started happening, and we decided that it'd be better for us to just stay here.
Mm-hmm. What was the reaction to this letter to the editor, Razan, your classmates at West High in Iowa City? What kind of reaction did you get?
I actually got a lot of people just texting me and stuff right after they read it, like, I'm really glad that you wrote this, and they had, like, very little idea of what was happening. So to read this, they actually like felt a tiny bit of what we all feel.
Mm-hmm. And that was your goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. So that must have been very satisfying.
It really was.
Mm-hmm. Newman Abuisa, let me talk to you about your activism here. You've been in the U.S. and in Iowa City for several decades. Tell us about the Arab American Institute and your role in it.
I am the leader for the Arab American Institute in Iowa. I've been active with them for 20 years. Our headquarters is in Washington, D.C. We are an activist institution for the Arab Americans, and we listen to their concerns and try to lobby for them in politics in Washington. And especially here in this year with the caucus year for Iowa, it is very important to be present in Iowa here with all Arab Americans, including Sudanese Americans, who are a very strong community in Iowa City and in Iowa in general, in Des Moines and other locations, Cedar mm-hmm. Rapids. And we try to bring, I guess, our issues here to the American public as well. It is important that the American understands what the Arab world is going through, and the Sudanese experience is a very hopeful experience for all Arabs, actually, because this revolution is really is the ahead of others toward democracy. And it is really heartening for me to see a peaceful revolution going through in the last few years. And even though the dictatorship and military government tried to push the public to become more militant, and they even, my understanding, put some weapons and bullets on the streets for the rebels or the revolutionaries to take arms, but the Sudanese called the police and asked them to confiscate those weapons. So this peaceful movement led by the professionals in Sudan, and also led by the expatriates or Sudanese outside Sudan, mm-hmm. and it's very important to connect the diaspora, I guess, in this country here to the Sudanese community, and it is a story for all other immigrants, actually, in this country.
So what can the Arab community here in Iowa, the Sudanese American community, do, really? You said this is the caucus season. What messages are you driving home? Do you talk to candidates?
We do talk to candidates. We follow them around. I know Mazahir has met with many people who are running for office for the presidency, for the Democratic nomination in this campaign. And we try to explain to them that it is really important to support the democratic movement in Sudan. We've been supporting in some ways dictatorships around the Middle East, and in my opinion, those dictatorships are on their way out, and it is important that America switch gear and support democratic movements and build the bridges with those democratic movements. And our Sudanese communities, for example, here in Iowa, will be really the bridge to connect us to Sudan, and also Sudan will be the key for Africa. Africa is a growing continent and will provide lots of markets for our food products here in Iowa, and it's very important to build those bridges.
I want to remind our listeners who may have just joined us, you're listening to Newman Abuisa. He's born in Syria, but a longtime U.S. Citizen, now living in Iowa City, as he just mentioned, Iowa leader for the American Arab Institute. Also with us, a junior at West High School, a Sudanese American, born in the U.S., Razan Hamza, who shared her letter to the editor, part of it anyway, and Mazahir Salih, Iowa City Councilwoman, the first Sudanese American elected to office in the entire United States. So quite an honor to have you with us, Mazahir. Let's talk a little bit about how you were received. Newman, I think you wanted to talk a little bit more. You've had a long time to live as an Arab American here in the Midwest. What are some misconceptions you want to clear up? Well, our media, I'm sure you'll say, is full of misconceptions.
Well, I mean, our immigrant communities in Iowa and around the country, actually, is really I just learned that the immigrants in this country have more foreign aid to other countries than our own government. Our immigrants come here to this country to work very hard.
Send money back.
And they work extra hours to send money back. And that is a good connection, I guess, to the home countries, which is helpful also helping those countries out of poverty and sometimes hunger. And that is a very important thing the United States can do. What also can also tell us that the immigrants are very hardworking members of our community. They are at schools, they are studying hard, they are working in every sector, from professionals at doctor's levels to any other profession in this country. So they are contributing members of this society. And as we learned about the Sudanese communities, they are connecting to each other and helping each other also come to be placed in Iowa. And Iowa has very low immigrant ratio. I think we need more immigration in Iowa, in my opinion, because Iowa's growth is very low. And I think we have to be open to more immigrants. And they are very good contributors to the economy here locally and also our connection to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, first of all, you, Mazahir, about the current climate in the U.S. A lot of people interested, very concerned about the U.S.'s border security, about tightening immigration restrictions, and a lot of talk, a very controversial topic. How has that affected you as a councilwoman in Iowa City specifically?
You know, just feeling like the climate now, like just against immigrants. Just try to make the immigrant feel unwelcome. And that's really drive me to work hard with our own immigrant community so we can elect the right person for each single office. And I just feel like we need to work hard because everything is not like...
Work hard in what way?
In just go and vote. That's we need really to educate people about voting. I remember when I first tried to run for council. No, like a lot of immigrants, they don't know even what the city council is, and we try to educate those people, so they can just start voting for every level of government, because at the end of the day, everything is connected. You know, like from all the benefit, healthcare and education, and everything is connected to the person you being elected. Elect the right person, you will get the right education, you will get the right healthcare, you will get all this. As a councilwoman, I just feel like I need really to work hard and, you know, in making everybody and all the immigrants in our community welcome. Because they are part of this community. Immigrants, they really add to the community like very nice, fabric and adding new cultures. And they are hardworking people, smart people, kind people. You know, the people should know that. And I guess that's one of the things that they should work on.
Mm-hmm. Sitting next to Mazahir is Razan Hamsa. You were a junior at West High School. I guess that makes you, what, 16, 17?
Huh? I'm 16.
You're 16, not of voting age for the next election. Are you politically active?
I do follow it a lot, but since I can't vote, it's like that's the one thing that I'm like not active in.
We mentioned you were born in the U.S., but you have a strong connection to your Sudanese background. How does this current climate against immigrants in some ways affected you, or has it?
It's really sad to me because I know the potential that people have, that we have room to grow, obviously, but there's in our like city, I think we do a really good job of like welcoming immigrants, even though there could be more. But basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Newman, let me turn to you because as a leader for the Arab American Institute, you have some events planned, panels. You want to focus on human rights. Talk about leveraging your Iowa connections here to alleviate, to help the conflict in Sudan move in the right way. We have this this power-sharing agreement right now within a matter of a few years. The hope is that there would be a burgeoning democracy there. How is action in Iowa possibly connected with Sudan?
Well, just like Mazahir said, we need to register people to vote to elect the decision makers who are making the right decisions for our country here first, and then also to help other countries as well. The second portion of that also, we have to educate our elected officials after they are elected and keep connecting with them and explaining to them the benefit of democracy and form a lobbying bloc to push our issues to the elected officials and educate our local Iowa public here. I was a national delegate for John Kerry about 15 years ago, and Iowa plays very, very important roles in the national conventions. I mean, I met a guy from Texas, and he said, well, you, Iowa is smaller than a county in Texas, and you have a lot more say than us. So in other words, that every vote in Iowa is worth, to me, more than 1,000 votes across the country. So we are very important in this country here to talk to our elected officials and talk to the candidates who are coming to Iowa and who will be staying in Iowa until February of next year, and have every chance to talk to them, to ask them the critical questions about immigrants, about our policies in the Middle East, about peace and war. What are the treaties we need with Iran, or we don't need a treaty with Iran? I mean, those are really critical issues, which are war and peace issues, which affect our country in very major way. And we have to put our elected officials on the spot, asking them about all those important issues, because otherwise they might not cover international issues as we would like them to do.
Mm-hmm. What do you all think about media coverage of the Arab world in this country, the Arab world? What do you see out there? I see you shaking your head, Mazahir. What's behind that when you see mainstream media coverage of Sudanese or the Arab world conflict or whatever's happening in the Arab world?
I guess the media cover what they want to cover. And especially like in the beginning of the movement in Sudan back on December 18, mm-hmm. nothing was being covering. And even our own local, you know, media in Sudan, and that's for a reason, certainly because of the dictator. He doesn't want this to be like public or anything. But what about the international media cover? I remember when the people went to the went to march, and they have a big march, like the Sudanese American went on march in front of the White House and the Congress in Washington, D.C., back on March, I guess. And it was like over a million people came there, but the coverage was really tiny. Like people send letter to the, you know, to, press, you know, to the, they send like letter to the press about this so they can come and cover it. No one show up, just few, like, channel.
Why do you think that is when you have a Democratic Sudan million march at the end of June, and it doesn't receive much coverage from media? What does that tell you? Why do you think that is?
I guess finally Jazeera start covering it. But, you know, after a while, but in the beginning wasn't there. And I know that because it was something happened in Sudan, and Jazeera has been kicked out from Sudan. After that, they start covering it.
Okay.
But while the dictator was there and while the protests were there, and they were there, they never covered it.
Mm-hmm.
What that means, I guess.
We have just a couple minutes left, for time for some concluding words. I want to know, perhaps from you, Newman, you know, we had the Arab Spring dating back to, 2011, if I have my dates correct.
Correct.
But we have, you know, we have Egypt, we have Libya, we have Sudan. We have a lot of examples of it not working out. What is the key to having a democracy flourish in the Arab world?
It is. I mean, we had lots of failures, as you mentioned, in many parts of the Arab world. And that those failures led to destabilizing a part of the Arab world and led to a mass immigration across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. And it is very important to stabilize those countries in their own countries and keep their countries anchored for their own citizens. And it's very critical for the Western world in general to work with the Arab world and the African nations to stabilize those countries and work with them to develop their economies and develop their middle class to become customers to our products.
Mm-hmm. Mazai here, we have just a few seconds left. Does Sudan, your native country, your home country, have the pillars to sustain democracy if this works? Do you believe that the institutions are there to sustain it?
I guess they will, because they are ready to do that. We have now here, we created in America something, a group called Sudan Next Gen. You can Google it. You can go www.sudannextgen.com. And this is have a lot of people who are really professional people who can, they are willing to help Sudan.
Okay.
In every sector.
Thank you very much. You hear
thank
the music.
You.
We are ready to,
sure.
to end this hour. It's been very enlightening.
Thank you for
thank
having
you very
us.
Much. Mazahir Sali, Iowa City Councilwoman, Sudanese American, first elected Sudanese American in the entire U.S. Razan Hamza is a junior at West High School. We wish you the best, Razan, very
yes,
much.
Thank you.
And Newman Abu Issa. Here, active as an Iowa leader for the Arab American Institute. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben, for your
thank
attention
you.
To this issue.
Thank you.
I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.